This is probably the biggest mistake. Here it is. Interview 5 different people in your company and say, what are our key differentiators? And if you get 3 or 4 different answers, you don't actually have positioning, right? What percentage of companies does that happen in? More than 50%, right? And all of them tend to be struggling with their marketing.
Taking on a market leader can feel overwhelming, especially when your budget is far more David than Goliath. But it's not impossible. In this episode, we reveal cost-effective strategies to differentiate, convert awareness into preference, and leverage your existing assets to capture market share. No massive funding required.
Are you a startup founder or CMO trying to grow your brand? There's good news. You're not the first. Our growth team is committed to learning and earning the skills and strategies high-growth companies have used to build their businesses. And now, we're sharing them with you. Welcome to Growth Team Radio.
Welcome to Growth Team Radio. I am your host, Mallory Kuhn, and I am joined today, once again, by Kevin Barber, the head of growth at Lean Labs. Hi there, Kevin. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. So today, we're talking all things positioning and specifically how to position against market leaders without breaking the bank, which can sometimes be a tricky little question here. So let's start, as we often do, high level, and then we'll kind of drill into some more details and some more tactical advice later in the episode. But starting real high level, can you give us a definition of positioning that you like and tell us why it's so important?
Right. So let me tell you what I think most people's view of positioning is real quick, which is most people's positioning is why you, right? So you're just making a case for yourself and your positioning is about you, right? But I would argue that positioning can be made even better, which is where you fit into the market. And that enables you to make it about them, right? Like them, the marketplace buyer, right? So, because if you're doing this right, you're solving a problem that exists in the marketplace, and that problem is something that they care about, and they've seen solutions, and they're trying to figure out where you fit into it. So with proper positioning, you're not actually marketing you, which feels very selfish and actually people tend to be a little bit skeptical of, but you can actually market the thing that you're doing that gets results. Like great positioning doesn't actually market you. It markets the new way, the way that you have adopted that is enabling you to get results that your competitors struggle to achieve, right? And it beats the old way that your competitors are using. Great positioning educates your target customer around the new way that beats the old way to get them the results that they've struggled to achieve, but you can get them that dream outcome in a faster, cheaper, less friction way using this specific method. And then with that education of the marketplace through your positioning, why you is self-evident.
Right. Absolutely. Well, that sounds obviously makes sense, but let's dive into how we do that, right? How can brands, companies start to identify those things that make them different, the thing that makes their approach fundamentally different from the consistent ways that things have been done? And what are your tips for how they can start to communicate that through their messaging?
Right. So what tends to happen is we come into a space, it's a crowded space, and we see, man, the pie is so big. Right. All I need to do is market that we do this also, and we can get a slice of that pie. Right. And I don't even need a huge slice of the pie. If I just got like a quarter of that pie, I'll be set. Right. And that is very common, deal of we do it too, and we're new, or we do it too, and we've been around a long time, or we do it too, and we have experts, or we have great support. But the problem with that is who says that? It's like everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone does that. Like that's the standard positioning. So therefore it it's not heard in the marketplace because they've heard it all before. There's no reason to believe it for you. So what happens is now what you want to do, if you want to talk about you know, how do you communicate this? How do you position this early on? How do you think about it? Is I like to think about it like this. There's problem level one, which is the problem that your target buyer has, right? It's the thing that's blocking them from the goal that they want to achieve. Right? Something standing in their way where they don't need you,
right?
So it's communicating that problem really effectively. But then if you want to be positioned well, we would move on to what I call problem level two, which is the problem with the alternatives. So like you're most likely not the first person to solve this problem, right? So there are other companies oftentimes larger than you, more known than you, more trusted than you, and possibly better funded than you. So, you know, your positioning would say, here's the problem that needs to be solved, and here's the problem with the way it's been solved up to now. And great strategic positioning points out a true flaw in what competitors are doing so that it positions the new way for you to solve it. And you can simply educate them on this, the problem level two, the problem with the alternatives, with their approach, the new thing that you've been doing, and simply share the results that you've achieved that your competitors have a difficult time matching. You show that you have raving fan customers that love the experience of having done it with you. And that is positioning 101. We could almost end this now. Just like, just do that. I think we can go a little bit deeper, right?
Perfect. All done. Great. This has been great. No.
But now let's talk about doing it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's great with that problem level too. What it's really speaking to is those gaps, right? Where are the gaps in the value delivery? Because how many times have you had a problem and you've already tried something to fix it and you see a new solution come on the market and you're like, no, you can't trick me. I've already tried XYZ and it didn't work for me. It was a waste of time, money, effort, whatever the case may be. What research do brands need to do up front to identify those experiences, right? Those gaps that the customers are having so they can accurately position themselves as filling those gaps, being different.
Right. So here's the deal. Let me throw a couple red flags first, right? So if you can only sell to people that are word of mouth referrals, that means, and you have a difficulty converting similarly qualified brands through a form of marketing, you know, like that's just doing an awareness of, hey, I'm only able to gain trust and buyers through word of mouth referrals, which means I lack authority. That's probably the most common thing that's happening, is they're able to sell through word of mouth referrals because their authority and their recommendation is transferred to you and they trust you immediately, but it's not working inside of your marketing. That's a huge gap that shows up. But there's also another gap, which is if you're only selling to people that have never bought from your competitors before, right? Then what happens is we might actually have a problem because we may not be in a truly hot market. Like a truly hot market it's a red ocean, which means there's companies in there vying for business. There's customers in there looking to have problems solved, but they're dissatisfied, which means there actually is a ripe problem in that market and they want to switch because the very best customer to get is your competitor's customer. They're the ones who are already sold on needing a solution. They're just not getting the result they need. So oftentimes the research up front is not what will get us that new first time, never bought before customer, but what will get our customer to switch from their current provider. And if you can go in there now you have an argument that addresses the entire market, even the ones that are, have a current solution. And yes, you know, if your competitors are any good, and the fact is, there's probably a few of them that are pretty good, right? They're going to have some diehards. They're going to have some people that are completely content with their solution that they don't need to change. But if what you're doing is truly well-positioned, you're going to be able to show their less satisfied customers, the ones that have a little bit of frustration, weren't really blown away, aren't completely sold, don't want to work at that company, right? Like those customers are a little bit less in love with the solution, a new, better way, and you'll be able to get them to switch. That's a great early test, is go out and talk to customers who already have a solution about their solution to test your positioning and whether they would want to look at it. This can be done in advance of six-figure spends in marketing because you can just go have conversations. Maybe give them a gift card or pay for their lunch, you know?
Right. Before you invest, you know.
100%. Before we run off with some idea, just assume it's going to work.
Yeah. Well, one of the main things about this episode, too, is, yes, we're talking about positioning, but we're specifically talking about positioning against market leaders, which we talked about a bit in that last piece. So, you know, you want to make sure, you know, that it's a hot market. And if it is, it may be a bit of a red ocean. How can really nailing your positioning help you minimize the gap in company size, funding, awareness, things like that, that exist between smaller businesses and their larger competitors?
Mm-hmm. Right. So here's the deal. In most markets, your company is not the most known, the most funded, right? You're not existingly the market leader, right? But there is a rule that you just need to understand. It's like a rule of math, so you just don't want to fight it, which is he who can spend the most to acquire a customer wins. So if that company, that larger, more funded company, even if they're not as good as you, even if they're not delivering at the level you deliver, if they can spend more to acquire a customer, you're in trouble because now they can always position themselves in front of you, right? So the gap that tends to exist for smaller businesses that you want to figure out how to solve is how you can out-convert the competition. How you can out-convert the competition, use your clients almost as opportunities to build your reputation stronger than theirs as you go until you hit critical mass. There's only two ways to do that I know of, okay? It's normally not to go... There's almost zero examples on the planet of small business going to market leader because they entered the space and decided to rival the incumbent. There's almost zero examples of that. Normally, there's a little bit of a hopping pad. So if you want to go from small business to market leader, normally you're going to either hop up into differentiated and niche. So you're going to serve a certain segment of the market at a level that no one else can touch. And you're going to become known for being the best in that segment. And then what you can do is you can use the money from that and the rewards from that and the revenue and authority from that to launch a second segment and then maybe a third segment and then utilize that to then challenge the market leader. So you can go niche to dominate a specific segment that they can't touch. Oftentimes you might want to go for where they're weak or for where you're strong. If you're lucky, you get both.
Right.
And then there's a second way. If you're not going to go niche and outperform in a specific market that you're purposely built for, which is a great way to outconvert the competition, strategically reposition, make them look like the inferior solution, right? Which is going to lead to outperforming marketing and profitable customer acquisition. The other way is to disrupt it, to do something totally different in a totally different way at a totally different price point. The cliche example of that is how Uber approached taxis. Like, we're not going to do anything like that. We're not even going to own any cars. Like, we're going to come in and do it an entirely different way that allows us to collapse the price, change the experience, flip it on its head. Small businesses oftentimes have this problem of we just want to do it too. So they fail to niche and show where they're differentiated, and they fail to disrupt, and they're just trying to get a piece of the pie. But there's really no reason for the buyer to not go with that more known, more proven, more established company. You're asking them to go, oh yeah, instead of buying computers from Apple or Dell or, you know, like name the largest computer providers, I'm going to go with Jihatsu, you know, like that's just not likely to be the case, right? And or Ninja Computers or whatever. Like, there's no real reason to do it because you haven't solved the problem or you haven't disrupted the way it's being done. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so that lack of disruption or, you know, failure to niche or, you know, approach one of those strategies, are those the biggest mistakes that you see startups making when positioning against incumbent leaders? Or have you seen other, you know, kind of pitfalls that people should be looking out for?
Right. So the biggest mistakes that I see come from a few flawed mindsets. The number one mindset that I see is... the competitors suck. Which competitors? All of them.
Everybody.
Right. So their customers are coming to you in droves. Well, no. you can find tons of negative reviews and they drown out the positive reviews. Well, no, but they suck. And so what happens is we just, and that is, I mean, think about the audacity of a founder just for a moment. Like it's, you gotta be an interesting person. You're like, okay, no one in the world is going to do this like I can do it. They've done it before, but I can do it better, right? So that is an initial bend. And I think that enables you to innovate, especially when you understand the problem and the gap in the marketplace. But you also have to know at least as much about your competitors as your buyer does, right? So oftentimes that assumption that your competitors suck, when the marketplace, like a little bit of research, suggests they actually don't suck entirely, but then you might be able to find their exact gaps, the real chinks of their armor of right where they are with a little bit of research, is probably the number one flaw, because it's really hard to position without actual awareness. If you come out with something that doesn't ring true, you're dead, right? That message will not be sticky. In fact, it will probably work against you, right? Mistake number two. Oh, crap. Maybe our competitors don't suck. Well, we'll just pretend they don't exist. We'll just market ourselves as if we're the only show in town. But that just comes off as inauthentic, because the customers know that there's other choices. And by the fact that you're almost pretending that they don't exist and you're not showing how you're different, how you're unique, why they should choose you, what you've done different to deserve their attention and business, then what happens is you're leaving it to them. You're making it their job to go review you against all of the competitors to figure out why you're different. And most likely, from what I've seen, if you leave it to them, they're going to leave your website, go to someone else's website, and you probably haven't done a good enough job of giving them a compelling reason to come back, right? So you leave it open for your competitor to outmarket you. I think those two things are the biggest problems. Assuming our competitors suck, and or, which is often this goes with it, ignoring them in our marketing, right? We don't have a problem level two. We don't think about the gap that we're solving that the competitors have not gone into. And then what happens is that leads to inaccurate positioning, right? Inaccurate positioning in the market actually sees that and goes, I don't know if that's right. But now you position yourself as an uphill battle right out of the gate. So the deal is that if you interview five different people in your company, this is probably the biggest mistake. Here it is. Interview five different people in your company and say, what are our key differentiators? And if you get three or four different answers, you don't actually have positioning, right? What percentage of companies does that happen in? More than 50%, right? And all of them tend to be struggling with their marketing, because they don't even actually have a uniform positioning known within the walls of their own company. How is that uniform positioning going to be magnetic out in the marketplace if it's not uniform inside of the company?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think hopefully our listeners aren't struggling with that, but I'm guessing some to many of them may be.
Well, here's the deal. Don't feel so bad. Strategic repositioning is the first step of our process, not suggesting someone has to do it, but how well is the positioning working? Where do we double down on that is the first step for a reason. It's because this is one of the most overlooked aspects of marketing. We just look out there, we see a ripe opportunity, and we just go after it without really sharpening our arrows first. We just run out there assuming that we can do it too. That normally does not lead. That leads us back to this podcast. How do we market position against leaders without breaking the bank? You need a narrative.
Absolutely. Well, once we have our narrative, let's skip forward a little bit in the process and talk a little bit about channels, right? Because we have any number of channels that we can explore and use when we are looking for, especially, you know, the awareness stage, looking for some more exposure. Are there any channels that are a bit more quote unquote level in terms of being a level playing field among folks with maybe different budgets or of different sizes than others? And on the flip side, are there any channels or marketing plays that smaller brands should probably just whoop, let's not waste our cash?
Right. So yes, there are channels that are more level than others. It's an amazing question, because just why you want to be differentiated and, you know, do the right things in the right order for your positioning, You can also think about that channels for your marketing. So, for example, we like bringing clients compounding growth through SEO. But is that a level channel? No, it is not, right? Because your brand's domain authority and how Google perceives you in the marketplace has a huge impact of the kind of results you're going to get. And it takes time to build that. So most likely, if you're just starting, your competitors are ahead of you. It's not a level field. You're not starting at the same level as them. You're starting at zero, right? Reputation, like when you're thinking about where you might appear on TrustRadius, Trustpilot, Gartner, G2 Crowd, Captera, or all of the others, right? No, because that's built over time and with a total of reviews, which if your competitors have been building their reputation longer than you, it's not a level playing field. But for those, when's a great time to get started, Mallory?
Now.
But still, like, you can't do everything. So it's like now slash how, right? And the deal is that there are more level channels. And I would argue that rather than thinking about which one's level, because you're probably going to have to invest in any of them, I don't want you to think that you can just have an instant result, right? But the deal is that if you can go into one, the question is, I have a strong belief. I learned this from Steven Larson, but it's about your target market. Your target market is not a person. It's a place. It's like, where does your target buyer hang out? Where are they having conversations? Where are they asking questions? If that's in a LinkedIn group, then that's the level playing field. You finding the target market where the conversation is ripe and you can insert it. One of the current trending, platforms of conversation is Reddit, right? If your buyer is 33 years old or younger, conversations around your category are probably happening on Reddit, right? If you can go in there and be the one that is answering questions in a channel where your target buyers are actually open to conversations, maybe it's TikTok, maybe it's LinkedIn, right? But the level playing field is most about going to where your customers are already conversing, right? And then when you understand that and you're building your examples and you're getting results, where would I put that? Oh, I would put that on Google. I would put that on reputation platforms. I would start building them. But think of it like this. That's just documenting the wins that you're getting. The level playing field is to know your hot market. The hot market is not who they are. It's where they are. Maybe it's going and winning at a specific event, right? And I know events are expensive, but if that's where your target buyer is, be where they are, right? And figure out how you can get in there at a level that you can afford in order to convert them in that hot place, rather than trying to go out to a bunch of cold or unknown markets.
Yeah, well, it's like you always say, right? You think good marketing is expensive, you should see how expensive bad marketing is, right?
Yeah, well said.
Oh, thank you. I heard it from a very wise man. So we always like to talk about examples here, share some examples. I feel like it helps me just as a learner. I'm a very example-based learner, and I feel like a lot of folks are. So can you share some examples of successful brands who really have some clever positioning that we can talk through a little bit?
Right. So let's go to some brands that did this really well. And I have to bring up some brands that are kind of big today, but keep in mind, when they did this, they were small. Okay. So oftentimes you might want to go back and look at, brands in your space. What did they do? Not what they're doing today. What did they do when they broke into the space? Right. And that's something I really enjoy doing. And let's take a couple of examples. If you were to take HubSpot, right, they came in and stood against something, which was outbound, cold calling. Right. And they said, instead of doing outbound, let's do inbound, because people are using the internet to find and search and shop and consider brands. So be the company that does that. It was right for the market. They were well positioned in front of a trend, right? And their positioning allowed them to grab the people that were already interested in doing that and see how they could do it on their platform, right? Like, that's putting yourself in front of the wave. But if you were to look after that, several years later, what was it? Several years later, Drift came along, right? Drift said, hey, the way HubSpot's doing it, it's kind of old and outdated. Like, who wants to fill out all these lengthy forms? And by the way, when they fill out those forms, like, what percentage of the people that fill out the form become a conversation? right? So Drift said, instead of doing forms, we want to do chat. We want to move directly into conversations. We're going to be a conversation company instead of a form conversion company, because forms don't make customers, but conversations do. So you see how what happens is in a market space, HubSpot didn't make themselves for something. They made themselves a switch against something. And then Drift didn't make themselves for something. They made themselves a switch against something, right? If you're to take ClickFunnels, possibly one of the most epic positionings of all time, they basically said websites are dead. Well, that's kind of a bold statement. Last I checked, there were like hundreds of millions of them, right? But they're like, but they what they basically said was is 99% of websites cost you money and don't make you money. And the fact is, I know this to be true. I know this to be true because, like, the fact is you have to have not just the right, you can't just have a website. You have to have the right positioning, right messaging, right offers, and you have to have traffic. But what percentage of companies have that? It's about 1 million websites have all of the traffic. And there's over 30 million websites just for, like, companies in the U.S., which means that it's 1 out of 30 that has some level of success. And you would argue it'd be the top 500,000 that actually have all the traffic and all the results. So that means that works for either 29 out of 30 or, you know, 59 out of 60 people. Like, their messaging that the website is broken and it doesn't make you money hits almost everyone. And they said, instead of doing it through a website, you should do it through a funnel. Right. And they positioned a new, different way, and they demonstrated how that worked and where that worked. And for the industries, they specialized into niche industries for which it worked and showed examples and then provided easy templates to do it with. And they built themselves a serious 9-figure company in the process. So if I was to say that what's the powerful level of positioning, problem level one is the problem your customer has, but the real level of powerful positioning is problem level two, the problem with the current solutions, right? And if you were to go to company after company, take a look at Salesforce, invented the SaaS market. They said, hey, this installing software and waiting years for updates and doing this all on local computers is broken. We need to move to a cloud model. Now is a massive shift in how people even thought about technology. But when they did that, they have dominated this space for more than 20 years. They still dominate, although HubSpot is knocking at their door, right? But for 20 years is what that positioning enabled them to do. So I give you another one, but it's going to show my age.
All right. I promise not to tease you.
All right, cool. So when Apple came out with the iPod, I know you haven't seen one in a while. I found one in a box. You know what? It still worked. I was so shocked. Anyway, it had Finding Nemo on it. That's what I remember. But,
oh, there you go.
Yeah. Like, oh, my kids were young. But the deal was, they didn't market against other media players. They marketed against CDs. Like, we're going to put 1,000 songs in your pocket, because that is completely not possible with CDs, right? And these other, you know, audio players, we're coming out with a market with a product that's at 10 times the price, but it had 10 times the capacity. So your positioning doesn't always have to be how you're cheaper. It can be how you're demonstrably better, and you need to stand out in a space. And you could argue this isn't a popular view, but it's factually true, Mallory. Apple was struggling up until that time, until they actually made a standout device. The iPod is what changed their growth curve. Their marketplace adoption of Mac computers was single digits up until that time, right? And they finally made something that was truly differentiated in the marketplace. It took off and allowed them to have the revenue to make investments that became an iPhone and an iPad. And then they moved off of needing to make their own computer chips when they went Intel. The iMacs and the MacBooks, they all took off. And that all came after the success of the iPod.
Absolutely. I don't think it's that old of an example, Kevin. Don't worry. I had an iPod.
Mallory, when's the last time you saw one?
I mean, it's been a minute, but maybe I'm old too. I have me a little iPad or iPod mini back
there
in the day.
There you go. All right, awesome. I feel much better. Thank you. But here's the deal. Why the iPods? Like, the market's always evolving, right? Why that changes, the need to be positioned well doesn't. So.
Yeah. Well, the last question I have, and I feel like you shared a few resources already, but I always like to give our listeners further reading and research, right? If they want to dig a little deeper into the things we've talked about today, what resources do you recommend for founders still building their brands, determining their positioning, looking to really, you know, dive deep into what we've talked about today and set themselves up for success?
Right. So let's agree with one thing. While you could feel a little bit defeated if you don't feel like you have great positioning, you ask three people in your company, you got three different answers, you're like, oh crap, Kevin might be on to something. That can feel a little deflating. But I want you to know it's not the company that's the most known or the most proven that wins. Okay? Not forever. So otherwise, Mallory, do you drive a Buick?
I do not.
Oh, you've heard of one.
Yeah, I have heard of one.
And what about a Zenith? Is that your TV?
I'm actually one of those unfortunate hipsters that doesn't have a TV.
Oh, that's amazing. But the deal is like, these are brands that were household names at a time, right? And they have lost that positioning over time. So what that basically means is positioning is an evolving sport. That's the first thing you got to know. Now that it's an evolving sport, how often are you going to look at it and how are you going to look at it, right? And one of the things that you can do as a rhythm is you can just start making a habit of calling customers, whether it's 3 weeks or 3 months after they come on, and go, why did you choose us? Because if you don't know your positioning, they do. Okay? So they do. And if you talk to your customers, that was a huge lesson for us, is we took that advice and other advice that was in the book, Four Steps to an Epiphany by Steve Blank. And we applied that, and that really helped us in our own positioning. Second, I'm going to bring out a little bit of a classic marketing book, The 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing. These are fundamentals to how you position your brand in a marketplace, and it points out both things you must do and the mistakes you must avoid. If you haven't read 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing, it was written in the 80s. And while there's one or two examples of dominating brands that didn't make it, Packard Bell being one of them, but the majority of the companies in the book from the 80s are still leading today because they follow the laws, right? So that's the second one. And the third one is Value Proposition Design by Alex Osterwalder. That book probably is what really enabled Lean Labs to double and triple down into strategic positioning for its clients.
Awesome. There's some great resources for everybody to check out. And that wraps up our conversation today about how to position against market leaders without breaking the bank. So thank you so much, Kevin, for talking to me today about how, you know, starters and smaller businesses can start taking on the big dogs.
Crushing campaigns begin with positioning every single time. And auditing that position and seeing what's working, what's not working should probably be at least twice a year, if not a quarterly activity. Don't do it for me, do it for you.
Perfect. And I hope our listeners can use these insights. They'll set their brands up for success in the long run with this positioning. So thank you, everybody out there, for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the show so you don't miss any of our episodes. And if you have a second, just take a moment, rate and review the show on your application of choice. Until next time, this has been Growth Team Radio.
Want to grow your business? Trying to find the right path to do it? Well, we've got the answers. Go to stopscaling.com. Yes, you heard right. Go to stopscaling.com, where we'll show you the exact way to grow your business this year.